Hey, Roros, do you ever call up Royally Obsessed on Alexa?
It's one of the easiest ways to listen to the pod. You can hear our latest episode every week there, thanks to Amazon Music, which has a full catalog of podcasts, including Royally Obsessed.
All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Royally Obsessed on Amazon Music. Oh no, mine is listening to me say that right at this moment.
A royal reminder, new episodes drop every Thursday. Tune in on Amazon Music. Now, on to the show.
Please rise for their majesties of Royally Obsessed, the podcast for all things royals.
Stand by! Three cheers for Her Majesty the Queen!
Welcome back to Royally Obsessed. I'm Roberta.
And I'm Rachel.
And it's time for your weekly update on the royal news you need to know. We're going to go pretty quick this week because we have some exciting stuff coming up on the pod, an interview with William Ivy Long, which we'll get to in just a sec. But a couple of royal reminders before we dive in. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group at Royally Obsessed. Subscribe to the podcast and leave us a royal rating of 5 stars if you're so inclined. And send us an email at info@gallerypodcast.com.
Woohoo! How are you, Roberta? How's your week going?
Just getting back from a road trip.
How was your vacay?
It was good. It was good. It was great to, you know, like we talked about last week, like driving is just a little less anxiety inducing. But it's good to be back. How was your weekend?
It was great. I mean, we actually got out. We went blueberry picking. We went really early to kind of keep the distance from people. But it was awesome. And my son, who has hated blueberries his entire life, ate about 100. So
no.
But we have a very extra special episode of the pod today. We're chatting with William Ivy Long, the costume designer for Diana, A True Musical Story. Reminder, that was set to debut on Broadway in March, right around the time that COVID hit, which was the biggest disappointment of our lives. I know you had tickets,
seriously,
right, Roberta?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sad.
It will be back.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see it.
I can't wait. William is a lifelong royalist, so it was a treat to chat with him about the show and Diana's most iconic looks in real life. But that's not all. We're discussing Meghan's keynote at the Girl Up conference, Kate's Zoom with a tennis legend, and some major news about the crown. But as Roberta said, we're going to speed through, so we have plenty of time for the interview. Here we go.
Yes, so we always have time for a royal cocktail, though.
And now it's time for the weekly royal cocktail.
So our royal refreshment this week. Cheers.
Cheers, Roberta. You're going to be proud of me. I actually mixed up a cocktail. I didn't go the rosé route.
Same. So we're drinking gin this week. So some of you might have heard that the Queen launched a Buckingham Palace gin. It's infused with lemon, verbena, hawthorn berries, mulberry leaves. Sounds really good.
Sounds
all
delicious.
Handpicked from the gardens at Buckingham Palace. So the Queen's own produce, I guess. And so the recommendation from the palace is to serve it with tonic water and garnish it with a slice of lemon, which is kind of surprising because we've always heard that the Queen likes it with Dubonnet.
Where's the Dubonnet? That's what I want to know. Yeah.
Dubonnet.
Where's Micah when we need her? It's Dubonnet.
Dubonnet.
Dubonnet. Dubonnet. Micah, we got you.
Yeah. So I'm drinking Hendrix with a splash of cranberry and tonic water.
So I still have remnants of the Monkey 47.
47, yes.
And so I mixed that with tonic water and a slice of lemon, as you can see
it
on
looks
top.
So pretty.
Because
cheers.
I was like, I want to follow the recipe. Cheers through the computer.
We're cheersing through the Zoom feed here.
Someday soon in person again.
So instead of a reader email this week, we wanted to discuss this amazing escapism thread in the Royally Obsessed Facebook group started by Kayla. Okay, this is what Kayla said. If money was no object, whose royal wedding dress would you have custom made for yourself? Go, Bowie.
Literally the best question ever. And I thought about it so much. And I feel like I'm taking the most like obvious answer, but I have a good reason for it. I'm going to say my pick is Kate Middleton's Alexander McQueen wedding dress. But
I knew it.
But it's like the obvious choice. It's a gorgeous dress. The 9-foot
it's
train.
Beautiful.
It's everything. The Cartier tiara. But my reasoning is the tailoring. I just think that when she stepped out, it was just like the fit of it. It just reminded me how vital a good tailor is. And I just loved that dress. And I loved the long sleeves, something that you just don't see as often in dresses nowadays. What about you?
I think I have to go, and you put this as your backup choice, and I have to go with it. Meghan Markle's Stella McCartney reception dress.
I'm bowing down via the Zoom.
I mean, I honestly think that like that's what I want my wedding dress to look like.
I could see it.
The halter, the backless, when she paired it with the giant aquamarine ring. Oh my gosh.
And You just need also that beautiful car that she stepped into while wearing
right.
it.
Of course. I mean, you have to have
the real accessory.
Jaguar. Yeah, you have to.
But shout out to Kayla. Come on. That was a really fun distraction. I think we need more of those in the Facebook group.
Yes. Yes. I would love that. Love it.
All right, guys. This week in royal history.
And now, this week in royal history.
Happy 73rd birthday, Camilla Parker Bowles.
Happy birthday.
73. After listening to her radio interview last week, she's so youthful and talking about ballet
really
and
is.
Everything.
The elegant swan.
The elegant swan. Camilla Rosemary Shand was born on July 17th, 1947 in East London at King's College Hospital, for reference, almost a year before Prince Charles was born on November 14th, 1948. She was the eldest daughter of Bruce and Rosalind Shand. Rosalind? Probably Rosalind. She grew up on a large country estate in Plumpton, Sussex, with her younger sister and brother. Her father was a successful wine merchant and vice lord lieutenant of East Sussex. That meant she socialized with members of Britain's royal circles from a very young age. She was also an avid reader as a kid and a dog and cat lover too, and her father used to take her fox hunting for fun, which I think is sounds so exhilarating and different from things that we do here.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen today, probably.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen today. Eventually, she headed off to the Queen's Gate School in South Kensington, and there her friends called her Milla, and she, as she was described by classmates.
I like the nickname Milla.
I do too.
Really,
I think that kind of is a cool.
We don't hear that anymore.
Milla. Her great grandmother, Alice Keppel, was a mistress of King Edward VII. And according to reports, classmates remember Milla walking into class at age 10, proclaiming, "My great grandmother was the lover of the king. I'm practically royalty."
Now, who knows if this really happened? This sounds like something.
It was in a biography. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't. Right. Yeah. I kind of went down the path of checking out the sources. It was in a royal biography about her.
That's really funny, though.
It's funny. I mean,
that was her claim to fame.
Yeah,
before,
right?
Yeah.
Her first job was out of school as an assistant at the decorating firm Colfax, but she got fired after coming in late from a dance the night before. She was apparently a partier. She loved going out. But to be fair, she got fired. The boss was supposedly a hothead, so notoriously. She met her first husband, Andrew Parker Bowles, at a debutante ball, and the pair married in 1973. Of course, she met Prince Charles at a polo match in 1970, and the rest is, well, royal history. So first, we just want to say a huge happy birthday to Camilla. I feel like that radio show last week was such a joy, and I think it kind of, the fact that it lines up with your birthday gave us this kind of additional insight into your life right now, but who you are. And it was a lot of fun to listen and get to know her better.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved hearing more about her during quarantine and how she really has opened up a lot lately. Like, I feel like her wearing jeans in the radio show, guest editing the radio show and being more casual. We've seen just a more casual side of her, talking about her hating the internet. Like, I just feel like she has really come into her own in the past few months and has really grown on me a lot. Doing the Tika Waititi, James and the Giant Peach reading that she did. So yeah, I think that she's really become a lot more relatable over the past few months.
Yeah, I think that she just seems like she kind of is one of the few royal family members, as Samir mentioned, that she kind of just, you know, does her own thing. And she obviously within protocol, but I do think that it's a lot of fun to kind of hear about her quirks and her interests.
Totally. And I love thinking about just like you mentioned the partying thing. Like, I love thinking about The Crown and how that was probably pretty accurate. I just feel like she was such a partier.
Yeah. totally.
So our first news bullet of the week, we just saw, and so we record this on Tuesday, so we just saw Meghan Markle do a keynote speech for the Girl Up Leadership Summit. And boy, were we jazzed to watch this just now. Bowie and I were like,
by the skin
slacking.
Of our teeth, we got it into this episode, guys. We really were like sweating a little bit.
Yeah, we were. So let's play that amazing clip.
I am extraordinarily proud of what you've already accomplished. Please continue to honor the conviction and the compassion that's awoken within you. I will be cheering you on. So will my husband. So will Archie. As you all continue marching, advocating, and leading the way forward.
So I feel like I have chills listening to it again. We are going to just speed right through this, but I wanted to talk first just about her appearance.
Yeah.
Her hair.
It looks like incredible.
Straight, long. Oh my God, it looks amazing.
But it also is kind of, for me, when I saw it, I was like, it's like quarantine hair. Like, I mean, I love how it looks, but it's funny because none of us have gotten haircuts during this time. So the length was just like the first thing I noticed. I'm like, Megan is all of us.
Totally. I loved this quote. Journalist Sophie Gallagher tweeted on, she said on Twitter, Meghan Markle is bringing full Los Angeles celebrity hotness for her speech. No more royal hairstyles, covered shoulders, or minimal makeup. She is back.
That is a great tweet. That was a good
find.
It
is. And it's just, it summarizes, like, I feel like she really has come into her own. She's not held back anymore by maybe certain royal protocols about appearance or whatever. And so I just loved it. She was wearing a royal blue top, possibly by Adam Lips. That's what supposedly, shout out to Megan's Mirror blog for always having the ID first. So that's supposedly by him, and then a Cartier Love bracelet. And so she speaks about pushing forward even when others try to silence you. She talks about the good and bad of social media. She calls out Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, and also WNBA star Maya Moore, just for their efforts and how, as leaders, they've really, you know, been role models for so many of us. And she says, quote, believing in true equality is not enough. It's going to take more than belief. We have to work toward it every day. And she also quotes the Dalai Lama. She says, compassion is the radicalism of our time, quoting him. She has so many quotable moments in this. It's really kind of amazing.
My favorite part was really, you know, that, you know, she said, your gut will tell you what's right and what's wrong, what's fair and unfair. The hardest part, and it was the hardest part for me, is to chase your convictions with action. I thought that that was a really, whether or not she meant to reference, you know, her personal experience leaving the royal family or not, I do feel like it, that part is really empowering, that you have to trust your inner voice and compass and make that move based on, You really have to go against what other people expect of you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was particularly, that resonated with me a lot.
So impactful. And I feel like, yeah, just like her saying, even having the conviction, you also need the action. And so I think that that just really kind of, you know, echoes what Harry and Meghan are doing right now and forging their own path. I also just wanted to draw attention to how excited the moderators were to announce her. They were so cute and so amazing, and they fangirled so hard and were like clapping her on, and it was really great.
The whole conference has been really good. I feel like dipping in and out and seeing the other speakers, it's really, I mean, very inspiring, especially, you know, from your couch where you feel removed from everyone.
Hillary Clinton, Sheryl Sandberg, Michelle Obama, Priyanka Chopra Jonas, they were all part of this and all gave kind of pretty short speeches, but speeches nonetheless. So excited to hear from them.
All right. So Kate has also had a busy week. Not only did she Zoom with Andy Murray in a classroom full of kids, she's teaming up with a new platform for parents called Tiny Happy People. So we were graced with another exclusive interview this morning that aired on the BBC. In it, she chats with three families in the Garden of Sandringham and reveals some exciting new tidbits about the Cambridge kids. We're going to play a short clip from that.
I was just saying, Louis doesn't understand social distancing. So he goes up like wanting to cuddle everything, and particularly any babies younger than him.
I just feel like any sort of reference to Louis's antics during quarantine is a delay. And we also, other quarantine revelations that she shared, my children have bottomless pits. I feel like a constant feeding machine for them. She also talks about how the Tiny Happy People program is basically gold dust for parents, helping them navigate a critical time for children's development. I don't know. Anytime Kate talks about parenting things, you know, as she did with the five big questions on the under fives, I just think that she comes alive and she is so engaged, and not that she isn't with other things, but it really is a sweet spot and close to her heart for her.
Yeah. And I kind of think that she like knows that we're looking for like these tidbits of the kids, and like, not to say that like the, you know, her cause is so important too, but I think like we really are like on the edge of our seats waiting for her to talk about Louis and Charlotte and George. And so I think she knows when to drop it and when to drop these little, you know, exciting things about Louis in quarantine and how, you know, he can't do social distancing, or that she's constantly trying to keep up with her kids' appetites. Like, I just think she knows when to have these little relatable instances and then also work it into the bigger cause and platform that she's championing. So I just think she's really an expert at these engagements now.
Yeah. No, she looked great. And she was wearing a black and white polka dot dress by Amelia Wixted and rocked another new hairstyle. Her hair was definitely lighter.
She's like, I feel like she has to have someone doing it because she has.
Yeah, she had to go to the salon for that. She didn't do it.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, the change is so dramatic. So it's like a short layers in the front, which kind of, I thought like Megan and Kate kind of on the same page with that, like layers like face framing layers around the front, and then like a blonde brown,
bronze color.
A lot lighter though, and her tan, like from what if they've been like outside a lot, like she just looks like amazing.
Also worth mentioning is that she started this project back in November 2019. So it's kind of, I mean, she's really been laying the foundation for it for a long time, and it has a lot of meaning. I think that it's ultra important too, because moms really do need that support, and it's kind of the great equalizer parenting. Totally. Love hearing from her on that. But also she, about that tennis Zoom, Kate celebrated the final weekend of what would have been Wimbledon if not for COVID by Zooming with Bond Primary School and Andy Murray, which I also thought was so fun.
So sweet.
I think multiple points scored, no pun intended, by
the tennis one. You're tennis a tennis ones. Player, so you know.
Yeah, I just love all the tennis stuff that she does. But in particular, her tennis dress by HVN, which retails
Harley
for
Vera Newton. With Harley, DJ.
Yeah, and it retails for $775. I was a little bummed about that because maybe I would have purchased it, but it is also sold out. That said, there's a couple of variations, but I thought, you know, it's just kind of on the nose, very clever of her. And just, you know, as we said before with the BBC interview, her rapport with the kids, she's just slowly back. And when they guess who is joining the Zoom, because Andy Murray was a surprise, I love her playful sort of joke whisper when she's like, "You are right." Like, you know, she's not, I definitely didn't do that justice, but I think that she has just an easygoing air to her always.
So next up, we are so excited to share our conversation with William Ivy Long, costume designer for Diana, A True Musical Story, which, as Bowie mentioned, was supposed to be on Broadway. It has been delayed, but we had the most lovely conversation with him. So here it is.
Roros, we have a very special guest joining us today, the illustrious William Ivy Long. William is the Tony Award-winning costume designer behind the upcoming Broadway show Diana, A True Musical. In fact, he's won 6 Tony Awards for his work on Broadway shows, including Hairspray, The Producers, Cinderella, and he's been nominated for 15. Yes, he's the man behind all 35, 38. William, we wanted to confirm with you, how many Princess Diana costume changes are there in the show?
They've been left alone for several months. They may have written some more scenes, but when we went on hiatus, she had 38 changes.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, but so 38 changes, you heard it from him, but he's also a huge and long-term royal fan. William, welcome to Royally Obsessed. We're thrilled to have you join us today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
So should we dive right into your royal obsession? So we want to talk about when you first fell in love with the royals and what drew you in.
Oh, what drew me in? I think there are many things that drew me in. I guess I should say my grandmother was from England. And so my mother was half English with 2 grandfathers born in the UK. That was my mother. So that side, but it was always sort of lighthearted. Like we'd toast the Queen on her birthday. And even though I didn't know what toasting, you know, like that. So there was always a reverence and there was a picture of Queen Victoria hanging on the wall. And then the current Queen, who was of course Queen since right after I was born. And so there was that sort of tongue-in-cheek royal, you know, fascination. And then as I got older, I realized, oh, Prince Charles and I are the same age. What do you make of that? And so he sort of became my, you know, I followed him going, oh, well, look, that's a different style of life. And so there's that. So that's how it began. Skip 2, and I'm crazy about Prince Charles. I'm just going to tell you, I really am. I have all his books. His books on gardening, on architecture, his watercolors.
Yeah.
And I've always identified with him in that way that, you know, the plebeians identify with their betters, as it were, going back a millennia. But I've always been interested in to see how his, and he's had rather a painful childhood, so and I didn't. So, you know, so there, Prince Charles.
Differences, so, yeah.
That's how it started. And then guess who came on the scene and changed the game? Princess Diana. I was already at school, college, and I just couldn't get enough. I thought, wow, oh, wowza.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And shaking it up and make it, well, she didn't start shaking it up until after the marriage and the babies and things, but just the fairy tale nature. I thought, oh, this is unbelievable. And there I was, a grown person, you know, absolutely fascinated. And people, all my friends would give me, not tea towels, thank goodness, but they would give me mugs. I have this huge, and it wasn't just me getting, they would come from all over because they knew I was fascinated. So I have this great collection. And that was tongue-in-cheek. It was still tongue-in-cheek. I'm getting to the real commitment. Here we go. And we didn't know, of course, a lot of the story of what was happening behind the scenes because we weren't supposed to. I mean, back then, it wasn't polite to know, to ask or to know, you know, that was private life and what your life was private. So it was only years later. So, but that Andrew Morton book, we started hearing a bit about. And
I'm currently rereading that, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's been really good quarantainment.
He saw our show out in La Jolla.
Oh, he did. Wow. Did.
He's a big supporter of ours and helps us with a few facts.
That's great.
And, that's his job, you know, facts, fact checking. Yep. So then she became even more real. And I was sorry to see the divorce. I've many friends are divorced and there's much about it, you know, that I know how painful that is for all parties. But then, oh my goodness, when she moved into her, you know, phase of walking the landmines and, but first, shaking hands without a glove to an AIDS patient. And I tell this story to my friends and now it's out there because I've already told it. But the same week that I visited one of my friends in the hospital, St. Vincent's is the hospital. And we had to wear hazmat clothes. And I've double checked this with friends of mine, but we really did have to wear them. Gloves and shoes and things on your head and all that. I don't remember the masks so oddly, but we did have all this stuff. And all thrown away after we left the room of where the of our friend. And I got home, and I think it was the same day, but it was definitely very close. I saw the People magazine with the picture of Princess Diana shaking an AIDS patient with no gloves. And here I am in the most sophisticated, you know, city in the world, covered in, you know, in biotech fabric. So that made me weep, of course, as we all did. We're doing a lot of that day, that time. But it, I really ratcheted into another level of support for her. And then everything she did was just supreme and superb, and how she navigated all of that, even though I did feel it was a bit anarchistic how she was treating the firm, the royal family, but I so committed to her. I had issues with some of the behavior.
Yeah.
But she herself was just such a beacon of light. And then the landmines, I mean, I can't even go there, and her with Mother Teresa. And then, of course, on my 50th birthday, that's when the accident happened in the tunnel in Paris. And we were in Nantucket and running around trying to find a television, and no one had a TV. So we finally found one. And then that day, you know, your 50th birthday, you're halfway done. And there she was at this incredible young age, having devoted herself to all these great things. So that's my journey of respect, fairy tale, magical, relating to Charles, and then totally being a big supporter of hers, and which I remain to this very day. And I think our show, our production, Diana the Musical, or what are they calling it now?
Princess, I think it was Diana, a True Musical is what the website says.
True Musical.
Yep. A True Musical.
And you know, that's okay. That's good. I call it Princess Diana the Musical.
Okay.
But I think it's ultimately she's a hero. She's a star and she's a leader. And she gets through a lot of muck and mire until she reaches that place. But she's there now.
Yeah. So what made her to you such a fashion icon?
Yeah, because she's also a big fashion icon.
And then there's that. I haven't even mentioned clothes.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into that. Just scratch the surface.
But first things first, what I was just describing is why we're so attracted.
Absolutely.
She herself and who she was inside in her heart.
That came first.
And what she did. Absolutely. but along the way. Well, she became, yes. There have been royal superstars before. The most recent mm-hmm. one in the royal family was Queen Alexandra. Hmm. And she invented mm-hmm. styles of dressing, and she was just a fashion plate, basically through about three generations until she died, because she was so chic, really chic. Now, there's a difference in being fashion plate and being chic. We'll get into that, or maybe we won't. But she really was chic, Princess, or Queen Alexandra. She was Princess Alexandra, but she was a Princess of Wales, of course, mm-hmm. to Queen Victoria, as you know. So the fashion plate, which we're not talking, saying chic, as I said, that's a whole different thing.
Yes.
But just embracing fashion, wearing the right thing at the right time. I think she has influenced even the Queen. The Queen looks so good today, I think, because of Princess Diana, setting that bar so high. Angela Kelly and then Stephen, I'm forgetting what his last name is, the two people who make the Queen's clothes, they really are, they've got the right color, they've got the right proportion. And I know it's all because Princess Diana ratcheted up the challenge to what should I wear to be seen? What should I wear to comment on what we're doing at this event? Of course, no one can beat the current queen with those brooches.
Oh my gosh, I know.
No, I bet you've already had some complete segments just on those brooches.
We've definitely talked about them. The week one recently. Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, but she really did establish herself as a fashion icon.
In fact, she also, and I haven't done a scholarly treatment yet of this subject, but I do believe she herself, Princess Diana, Princess of Wales, basically affected the current red carpet. Well, who knows what the current red carpet is, if there'll be one.
If there'll be one again.
But before all this, there was a culture of the red carpet. And mm-hmm. I really feel she affected that. And we are following in her red carpet footsteps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's a big statement.
That is a really big statement. I mean, and I think she also, like you said, she kind of set the bar for the Queen, and it seems like she paved that way for, you know, the next generation, like with Kate and Meghan and all of the different royals that have come behind her. I mean, I feel like there's so much around, you know, everything that they wear has so much meaning and significance. And we personally, both Roberta and I, really, really spend a lot of time looking into that.
Well, I follow several on Instagram. It's the only thing I follow. Mm-hmm. And I follow Kate and William, of course, and Meghan and Harry and Clarence House. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Queen. Mm-hmm. Queen still wins at this moment.
Yes.
She's still the best.
Oh, my God.
Where's the best things? So I follow that. And because the challenge that Princess Diana set up, are you going to be a better person? Are you going to make the world better as a royal that we look up to? She set that challenge, and every one of them is following and has embraced that challenge. So again, it's not the clothes, it's the how they use their clothes to support whatever, either red carpet or barefoot down the country lane, you know?
Yeah.
We judge them on that, and she set that bar.
Yeah, it's so
true. I keep
saying
that.
I mean, she
going
did.
Going to the bar, setting the bar.
It's the theme of the episode. I love it. Absolutely. So can you summarize Diana the Musical for our listeners in a couple of sentences? What does it cover?
I will tell you, the overview is there are no villains.
Interesting.
We are not blaming. There is no villains. There are a complicated group, as if thrown together by random of people with very interesting stories, backstories, complicated personal intrigues, and they were mashed up together by the spirits. And so the way this plays out, you see each person's point of view. Mm-hmm. We added that organizing sense of storytelling after the out-of-town tryout. We had extra characters, and they've eliminated some of the extra characters. So you can see Camilla's point of view.
Interesting.
You can see Charles is, of course, and of course you can see Princess Diana's and the Queen's. Mm-hmm. So you're able to see all these different mm-hmm. points of view, and it seems as if they were destined for a mashup.
Yeah.
Because the backgrounds, the expectations were so very different. Naivete of a young lady believing in princes and princesses. Her family were courtiers. She grew up on the, you know, her father and grandfather worked for the firm. Yeah. So it wasn't that she didn't know what the game was, but that spell was so indelible. And then to just see how it played out, that's the story. And everyone comes off very human, and I feel respectful. We respect them. They got through it.
Yeah, gosh,
they got through it.
We cannot wait to see this. I'm counting the days. Yeah,
that's in a nutshell. I don't need to tell you what happened because everyone knows. Especially this crowd.
Yeah, especially this crowd. Exactly. How did you get involved with the? I mean, you were involved when it was in La Jolla. Am I saying La Jolla?
La Jolla.
La Jolla. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. La Jolla.
La Jolla.
La Jolla. So basic of me. La Jolla. How did you get involved? Yeah.
You know, I got involved in the most, it's not embarrassing because this is one of those ends that justifies the means. I had worked with the director, Christopher Ashley. I'd done several plays with him in one musical over the years, over 20 years. We're about the same age, although he still looks younger. Damn him. I know. So anyway, he's great and so smart. He most recently directed and won a Tony Award for Come From Away.
Okay.
So he can tell a passionate story. And I read in the paper that he was directing A Princess Diana the Musical. And I just called him up and I said, Christopher, when are you next in New York? I want you to come by the studio. Well, as it turned out, he was between planes and had like 3 or 4 hours, came by my studio. And what I had done is surrounded my studio with printouts, with Xeroxes from all of my books, some from online, but mostly all the books I had. I had 100 royalty books.
Wow.
And I spread them all out. And I sort of ambushed him. It was a guerrilla attack.
Okay.
I said, I have to do this musical. So luckily we had worked together before and had a great working relationship, but this one really solidified it. And it's a really great, he's a great storyteller.
That's how I
got the job. I was shameless.
That's what you got to do. You got to, you know, make sure you get the opportunity. You got to do it whatever way you can.
That's it. That's the American way.
That is the American way. Yeah. Well, I was thinking that, you know, what I really enjoyed about our conversation, for full disclosure, William and I had the chance to talk back in pre-COVID days. And I loved when we went through a few of the key looks from the show and you kind of gave a bunch of background about how the creative process and what the messaging you thought Diana hoped to send. So we'd love to have you talk through a couple of those. But we also, just before we talk about that, we'd love to have you tell us how you selected those 38 looks that appear in the show and what it was like to possibly edit those down.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, oh, good. Thanks for the sympathy. Well, first of all, the playwright, Joe DiPietro, and the director, Christopher Ashley, selected most of the looks. The playwright, because he told the story with indelible moments that we need to recreate, not copycat exactly, because that doesn't serve a purpose. We have a different Princess Diana. We have a different time. Mm-hmm. We like now things to fit in a different way. You know, the 80s were, someone has a lot to answer for the 80s.
So true. So true.
But she pulled it off anyway. But when we look at the 80s now, we go, ooh, 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 ouch. And so I've adapted to keep the spirit, but yet to say, ah, isn't that magnificent? I want that dress.
Yes.
You know, that's been the final fitting detail. But back before, as to answer your question, is that Joe DiPietro chronologically, you know, set up certain of the looks and we touched those bases. Then Christopher, when there was a end of act one magical transformation series of boom, 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 where she learns that her power, that she has power with the press and she has power through the choices of clothing that she wears and the way she accessorizes and wears them. So Christopher actually set that up. He was very familiar with, and then my room, my basement, which is just filled, still to this day, filled, and I've done several things since, but it's still filled with all this imagery. And he picked. Then, every now and then, there was an at-home look where we were not privy to what that was. And that is where I had to imagine what would she wear at home. Many of them were quick changes. Many of them, she's getting ready to go out. So I knew what the outlook, you know, putting on the jacket ended up looking like.
Right. Yeah.
What was she wearing under it? So we did a bit of that. And as I said, they're all interpretations. They pay homage to the designers, Belle Bassoon, of course, Catherine Walker. And and there are 12 designers that I list in my bio. In fact, my bio, I don't say what I've done. I say what they did.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh.
I say hats off. Hats off to the original designers of the clothes that we feature in the show.
But then your modernization of that, I think that that's such an interesting aspect of it because you do want people to aspire to wear what you're seeing.
You want them to go out and buy
it. Yeah, that's what we want to do. But
you want them to wear it, you know, because they're still drop dead gorgeous. There's one instance with the shoulder pads that I had pulled in the shoulder pads on one of the gowns. And then it was used in a special way where it had to have a pow factor. And I added them back. And we really actually used that 80s pow. Of course, they fit. The rest of the dress fit. But there was a pow. I underestimated it. And then I added it back. And it's a real pow.
Wow.
And, Gina Duvall, the actress playing, the brilliant, brilliant. Dynamic actress playing Princess Diana. She is actually the one who encouraged me. She said, you know, I know we took these in. She said, what if we... And I said, let's try it. And we got some more fabric. And I said, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's power dressing to the nth degree.
I know. I kind of like that symbolism behind the shoulder pads. I never thought of it. The pow.
There's a pow. It's a pow and a power.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I recently watched a royal fashion documentary, and one of the anecdotes that I love that I didn't know if you had heard of this before was that Prince William was telling Princess Diana which pieces to select for that auction at Christie's. And so he was telling her, like, this dress is way too worn looking. You know, this one is, you know, not going to sell. Do you think that Prince William and Prince Harry were there often with her when she was selecting her outfits? Or what is your take
on
that?
Well, and the favorite comment on that is that he thought the Elvis dress was too flashy. Elvis dress being the pearls with the high collar, which she nicknamed the Elvis dress. And she may have nicknamed it that because he made such fun of her about it. But it's a real razzle dazzle, but it's also glorious. And Catherine Walker again. And I had to simplify that too because our Princess Diana is more petite and couldn't have the... It's still hand beaded with 10 billion pearls, but it's doesn't have a pronounced border. But well, to that question, I bet you no. I don't think they were there with her picking things out. I think she had a really good team. I've got the two books by the couture. Tour designer for the Queen right now, and she's written two books. I got several copies for Christmas of the latest one. Several people gave them to me. the dynamic is very personal between the wearer and the lady in waiting in charge of the mistress of the robes, but in this case, the maker of the designer of the robe. So I think that was the choosing. Was done between Princess Diana. I do not know who her main person was, the name, but let's just say Catherine Walker was, because she certainly created some indelible imagery. But I bet you Princess Diana, she was so open and loving with her boys. I bet you they came in and watched her get dressed, like we all used to watch our mothers get dressed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fancy balls and things like that.
Yeah, well, yes. I did want to mention one thing that you talked about when we previously spoke about how Diana actually used a camera to see how she looked ahead of wearing looks in public. That's so fascinating.
So modern. She did. The first time I ever, it's so modern. And she, maybe someone did this before. Well, they had mirrors. I know that that Queen Alexandra had a room of mirrors.
Interesting.
That she would walk in and you could see. You could see the back because she really wanted to know how the back looked, what the side looked. And back then there was corseting. I mean, it was total control. I mean, there was no detail left unchosen. Oh, and I forgot to say, after Queen Alexandra, the next and the only next really chic royal was Princess Marina, the Duchess of Kent.
Oh,
and she was very chic, very chic. And I use the word chic in the correct French, Frenchified sense. But I don't know about her room of mirrors, but obviously she knew what she looked like coming and going. Mm-hmm. But what Princess Diana did is she had herself videoed by an assistant walking through a door. What you look like as the door opens, how does the train look? How long before the door shuts? But also just details of turning the head, because everyone has a better side. I mean, everyone does.
Everyone, right.
Except, by the way, Natalie Wood. Natalie Wood, remember the actress?
Yeah, of course.
Natalie Wood from the back a while ago. Natalie Wood is the only person who was completely symmetrical. They measured, Life magazine used to do things like that. Oh, let's measure people. And do we still recognize them if we cut them in half and double them? A lot of people, you don't.
Yeah.
She was the only one completely symmetrical. Part of the attraction is people are lopsided with a quirk, you know, and it's beautiful. So Princess Diana had different sides. Also, I think it probably because sometimes she would switch she had a way of which shoulder when she did an off the shoulder, but I've seen it the other way. You have to be careful because they switch cameras, but you can always tell by the side they wear the order on. It's always this side, the left.
Oh, wow. And that's their good side.
That's their good. Well, that's the side you have to wear the homage to the queen.
The homage to the queen. Side. Okay.
So anyway, that doesn't change. But you can. So anyway, yes. And I remember reading about it at the time. I said, well, isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, it is so brilliant.
You want to see what the camera people, what the photographers are going to see. So that was pretty avant.
That's very smart. That's incredible. Well, I feel like it's also the perfect segue into the outfits we want to ask you about. So again, I think we would love to just know kind of the details behind the message she was hoping to send, how you adapted them for the show, and just talking about her most famous looks. So to kick things off, her engagement suit, which I don't think there's a designer attached to.
No, I think she bought it at Harrods.
Okay.
I think so.
Oh, right. Off the rack.
I think so. But that engagement suit, that is where she's standing on a lower step.
Oh,
the Prince Charles. Because, you know, they were basically the same height.
How tall was Diana? She was around
5'9", 5'10". And then their heels. And you can sort of gauge how well they're doing with each other of how long is she going to wear the flats.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. She started to break out the heels. Yeah.
And you know, there's another one that you won't show just for fun. Talk about power dressing and making a point. You know, the very first trooping of the color, which is the Queen's official birthday, June? It just happened. Anyway, June.
Yeah.
And yes, it just happened. And she was with carrying William with child. And she knew that on that balcony, all the men were going to be in red uniforms with black trousers. And because that's, you know, for, shall we say, several hundred years, that's what they wear. The red coats are coming. Mm-hmm. And she wears green. She wears emerald green standing between all those red ones. I thought, oh, you go, girl. Yeah. Something's up. Yeah. You're not feeling good.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, that's beside the point. Yeah. I just thought I would tell you.
No, I love that.
I would just tell you that. Because she knew what that balcony looked like.
Yeah.
And usually everyone, all the ladies, let the reds be the reds. You know, they're all in whites and off-whites and pastels. And emerald green. Like, I am.
She was always
this.
A standout. Yeah. But yeah, but she really was not having a good time. But the engagement suit.
So the engagement, that beautiful, it was a beautiful blue silk. And I made it out of 4-ply silk. So it would hang a certain way and last forever, you know, through a million, all these quick changes. And yes, it was very ladylike, and it had that collar and that bow with those flying birds on it. So
I thought
it looked very ladylike.
And what do you think the message was that she was trying to send with that? I mean, that was kind of it was a really big day for her.
I'm playing ball with you all. And also she had a blue stone, not the same blue, but she had a blue stone in her engagement ring. And I think, you know, she was blonde and beautiful and blue. You know, blue can be a passive color.
Mm.
So maybe I think this was I'm playing ball with you all.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't
it was a beautiful.
But it wasn't royal blue. That one wasn't like
it was not royal.
It was not
blue.
Royal blue. No, I remember that distinction.
It's sort of a cerulean blue. Sort of a cerulean blue, but it was silk and it was quite lovely. And she wore it with almost flat shoes. So that was also, that's the giveaway too. What are the shoes? Yeah. In other words, how tall are you connected?
Yeah.
Next to Prince Charles. she did. And then she was on the lower step. So he was taller than she was.
Love that. The photos were great.
Yeah, I didn't realize that she was on a lower step. That makes so much sense.
Absolutely.
Now.
All right. Well,
note to self, you know, and, you know, when you want to be charming or you know, or what was the story here?
Yeah, exactly.
What was the story here for the palace people taking the picture?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, so
remember, she was new at this and that was how it went. So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so look.
It was also a little blousy. It was a little. It wasn't tight fitting at all. Remember, these were that period, and so I took it in when I did my version of it. I took it in a little more so you'd see more of the body, but it was rather blousy.
Yeah, you're totally right. It was thinking of the photos.
A lot of fabric there.
A lot of fabric there.
So remember, this is also, since you're asking, this is the heyday of for day clothes. Not evening clothes, but day clothes. This is the heyday of Laura Ashley.
Yeah.
And Laura Ashley dressed women, and they obviously chose to be, as little girls. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little innocent. I'm a little girl, no matter what your age is. But so that's, it's in that, remember, that's in that style. She wore a lot of Laura Ashley type things with patterns, but this style, to really go back to your actual question, which I wander, sorry.
No, you're fine.
She's the queen still does this. It's a solid, strong color, one color, not a big pattern, so that people can see you from a distance.
Yep.
See, that's royal dressing now for the queen. She does have coats that are the solid color, and then underneath there's a dress that has prints. This is the first example of her playing by the royal rules. A bright color, and then there was a blouse underneath that had a little pattern, coordinated pattern.
Yeah. No, I love that.
So you can see her as one look.
Absolutely. And I think that mentioning the Laura Ashley phase, let's talk about the wedding dress as the next look, because I think that that was a part of it. Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, David and Elizabeth Emmanuel created several things for her over the years, and she had met them. And there's all this intrigue about making duplicates and, you know, keeping it under wraps, because every wedding dress, especially this one, was, anticipated. That was the ultimate. I'll never forget seeing her get out live. Well, not, yes, live. It was early in the morning. See her get out of the carriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh my goodness, look how wrinkled it all is. But of course I knew it was tissue, silk, 100% silk tissue taffeta.
Yeah.
Not satin, taffeta.
Oh, gosh.
And taffeta, part of the magic of taffeta is it crinkles. And you see that. And, mm-hmm. but she basically was lost in a big meringue.
Yeah.
It's a perfect way of putting whipped, it. Whipped meringue. But then there's so many images that go into weddings. You know, they begin, we're told back in Roman days, the Vestal Virgins wore white and wore veils and were totally veiled. But along the way, you know, various people, including several of Queen Victoria's daughters, they did not wear white. When the pictures were printed in the newspaper, they looked like they were white because it was black and white printing.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
That is really interesting.
So a lot of people wore yellow or pink or blue. And it was because of the way they were conveyed to the public that it looks like all brides are in white.
Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating?
That is so interesting.
So because you go to Kensington Palace every now and then and you look at royal wedding dresses and they're not all white. So that the Vestal Virgin idea, the I'm sort of a meringue. This is not about me as a woman with a body.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Being careful here.
Yep, interesting.
It's being I am a little doll dressed up.
Mm-hmm. And that was
and that's what
intentional. That's what it was. That was very intentional. It was the fairy tale.
On purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairy tale. I'm a fairy tale princess, little girl turning into an actual princess on this very day at such a ding, ding, this now you're a princess. And she arrived as a sort of big dressed up doll and exited as a princess. So there, and she was wearing the Spencer tiara. She only wore the two tiaras, you know, in her life. She liked her childhood family one, the Spencer, which she wore throughout her life, but she really loved the Cambridge tiara, which Kate wears now to great effect. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it looks stunning on
Kate. But yes, that's wedding. So the wedding dress tells a lot of stories, all of the ones, and not a womanly detail of it. A little girl.
Yeah.
It's a little girl.
Absolutely.
Well, she was 19. For heaven's sake, she was still a teenager.
Yeah.
But it just collides with no Meghan Markle dress, which was, whoa, gorgeous, or Kate's dress, which was, you know, referencing Grace Kelly,
yeah.
Princess Grace. But they were both very beautiful, very sophisticated. There's nothing sophisticated about Princess Diana's dress.
But it's
not an ounce.
Sends a different
ounce,
message.
Except for, of course, workmanship. The workmanship was sophisticated, was beautifully done. I've studied details, and I personally sewed all the beads on the dress.
Wow.
The one we used in La Jolla.
Yep.
And so I know how many.
Wow.
And what the lace was. So great respect for the workmanship and the craftsmanship.
Absolutely.
A lot of couture artistry went into that.
So fascinating. Now, flipping the script, what about the revenge dress? Totally opposite
Ooh,
time of her
yes.
life. Is that in the show?
Here we go.
Is the revenge dress
Here
in the
go.
Show? Or you
yes.
can't? Oh, okay.
No, I'm just going to tell you.
Okay.
Yes, the
Woo.
Show. The revenge dress has become one of the most famous dresses in the world. And she had Stambolian. Ms. Stambolian designed it. And everyone, when they found out, they thought she was a foreigner, but no, totally English, but with a from another place name.
Mm-hmm.
And Princess Diana had chosen it with whoever her people were. I can't believe after all this focus, I still don't know who were her people, you know. And she had it in her closet. And we make a big thing of the lyrics of the song, you'll see about wearing it, that it's slightly risque. Slightly. Anyway, it was, but boy, could she wear it. It was not appropriate for the certain royal events, because for the very first time as a out in public, it was a drop dead, gorgeous, sexy dress, mm-hmm. sexy cocktail dress that, everyone would want to wear right now. I mean, boy, oh boy. I prophesy that various people will knock that off again.
Again.
Because it's just it's just very, very, now I looked at it structurally and I've seen it, and it's really not black. Everyone thinks it's black, but it's not. It's inky blue. It's like one of those Mont Blanc blue blacks.
Okay.
You know, that is literally ink. And that's what it is, which of course works with the skin magnificently.
Yeah. And that was kind of her,
because it's not black.
And the occasion she wore it on, it was really meant to, that, you know, that was her messaging kind of was.
Well, what happened was, according to our story, is Prince Charles, she was interviewed via Carrier Pigeon for one book for Andy Morton. And Prince Charles wanted to have his side heard. Mm-hmm. So he goes on television and is interviewed, and it's pre-taped, and it's getting, or how did they know what he was going to say? Maybe it was live. I don't know, but they knew he was going to fess up, and they knew that, and she wanted to one up him. And so she wasn't, she had not accepted this Serpentine Gallery, art gallery opening. But then at the last minute, she decided to play ball, fastball.
Yeah, fastball. Exactly.
Fastball. Yeah. And so she did.
She did it well.
She looked magnificent. Right. She looked magnificent.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, it was a slam dunk for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So I think the last look we wanted to bring up that – it has a great amount of significance is the suit she wore, or the outfit she wore when she met Mother Teresa. Or I know she met her a few times, but and sort of what that means for you, what that meant for her.
It means a lot to me when she. I'll go slowly so I won't cry. There is a look that when she left the palace, she adopted. It is 2-piece suits. Very form-fitting with a today point of view form-fitting, and above the knee. She wore them above the knee and with no stockings. So these are all taken for granted today, these choices, you know, all the words I've just said. Back then, this was revolutionary. And what they meant to me, and I know they meant it to her, that's why it means it to me, is I'm a woman now. And they were business suits. There was no blouse underneath it. Mm-hmm. You see there, I bet you there was a shell top so she could tell, but I have not seen it. But they were all in different sleeve lengths, some short, some long, and they were longer peplums, overlap. I mean, they're different variations. And it just makes me tear up when I see her with Mother Teresa, because there's Mother Teresa, almost half her size, in, of course, white with that blue stripe, and there's Princess Diana in white to honor the white that Mother Teresa's wearing. But of course, she's above the knee, spike heels, kicker, you know, but doing her job, calling attention to Mother Teresa's charity, and that was why she was there. And obviously to meet and to, you know, bond, but also it would bring support to Mother Teresa's order and what they were doing to help people. So I love that look because Diana was so who she was. She wasn't playing by other people's games. That was her look.
Yeah.
No nonsense. I'm wearing a sexy business suit. I'm doing my business.
Yeah, she really had come into her own at that point.
Totally. Totally. And no one wore it like that. And I'm telling you, when our Princess Diana shows up wearing that, we only have it in one scene. No, we have it in two scenes, different ones. It takes your breath away because it's the one you remember at the end.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're gasps when she walks out wearing, in this case, it's peach, but she's in a white one. She's in a Mother Teresa white one. You'll see.
We can't wait. And yeah, that's such an amazing photo. It
tears me up. This eye does what it wants to do.
No, of course. Of course. I mean, it's really emotional.
We're so excited.
I know. Well, William.
Very personal, very emotional.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, William.
We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you so much.
That was such a great chat. I cannot wait for the show to be back on Broadway.
It makes me so excited. I know. I was so bummed that my tickets got refunded because the show was canceled that I was supposed to go to back in May, but I cannot wait for it to be back. So before we adjourn the Royal Pod, we'll quickly go through our highs and lows.
It's time for the Royal Highs and Lows.
So my low for this week, it's a little outdated, but people are using the grounds of the Queen's Castle as a toilet. This report came out a couple weeks ago, but
whoa.
It is. I know, I didn't. I was like, wait a second, I have to talk about this. So yeah, I'm a little late to this, but Balmoral Estate reminded people not to use the grounds of the Royal Castle as a loo. Balmoral is the Queen's Scottish estate, as we all know, and its Twitter account is very active. They posted... I was going to say just like the bowels of its visitors, but I...
Come on, that's so good. You got
to... I had to say it. Yeah, so the Twitter account posted that people have been defecating on the grounds and leaving wet wipes behind, presumably because public restrooms there were closed because of COVID.
Gross.
So it's super gross. So at balmoralcastle.com is the handle, and they followed up with specific instructions for people who need to relieve themselves outside on the grounds. They said if you need to pee, please don't do it, you know, close to streams or lochs, as they call them, which are rivers. Lakes, sorry. I'm forgetting my Scottish. So they ended up opening public toilets last week. So, you know, controversy averted. But I just feel like it's interesting that a social media account that's like associated with the royals is tweeting about poo. Like, I just...
it's dumped.
Pooping in the woods.
Are people dubbing it Poopgate?
I dubbed it Poopgate. I said it was Royal Poopgate.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I get Town and Country's editor Carolyn Halliman's weekly email newsletter, and also she's been a guest on this pod before, and in it she said her story about this royal hashtag Poopgate is possibly the pinnacle of my journalistic career. I laughed at that. I lolled at that, Caroline. Thank you for that.
Oh my gosh, too good. Well, my low of the week is on a definitely different note, but it's the quest to reveal Meghan Markle's friends. The latest in the legal action against the Mail on Sunday, the Duchess of Sussex filed a witness statement at London's High Court of Justice last week in an effort to protect her friends, stating, "These five women are not on trial, nor am I. Each of these women is a private citizen, young mother, and each has a basic right to privacy." I mean, this is just an ongoing low for me, and I won't read the full statement from Meghan, but the Mail on Sunday's response is basically, "We have no intention of sharing their identities, but FYI, we see no reason why they should stay secret." Gross. That's just like,
no,
I mean, it feels like I can understand Meghan's stress over this, but you know, Meghan is requesting that the court protect their identities. Plus, publishing the names could lead to witness intimidation if they're asked to be a witness in the trial. So it's very complex, but I imagine just having to write these statements over and over again from her is just painstaking and awful.
As personally curious as I am about who they are, I just feel like, you know, she's so right. They do need to be protected. They shouldn't be, you know, their identities shouldn't be published amidst the trial. Like, at least wait till after the trial, mm-hmm. if that's what she's worried about, you know? It's just so...
It's such a circus, yeah.
I know, it really is. So, but on lighter news, my high of the week is that Meghan and Harry were spotted out in LA. And I think for the first time since April, they were spotted out, you know, not doing their charity work, just out and about. So they were pictured leaving the dentist office, supposedly. So I was wondering, is Meghan prepping for her keynote speech that we just saw, where she could flash
we all
her
need
pearly
a cleaning.
Whites?
Come on, yeah. We're all overdue for a dental cleaning.
Her teeth looked amazing, so maybe that was it. But yeah, so Harry was wearing the same gray polo he's worn in earlier paparazzi pics of them, and it makes me think he has like 7 of that polo. Like, he just wears the same thing, or like he didn't pack enough for LA. I'm just like, I don't
there
know
are
what
Twitter
happened
memes
there.
I think showing that, where it's like he really is wearing the same hue in every
And then she wore a very comfy looking cream colored linen dress, retails for only $76 by Magic Linen, which is a female-led company,
and it's not sold out, which is cool.
And it's not sold out, and yeah, and they focus on sustainability, but they have, I think it was like fully stocked the last time I looked. And then she wore two-tone Chanel ballet flats and a straw sun hat. I really like her laid-back LA style. Yeah. I'm digging it.
I'm loving it. More appearances, please.
Yes, definitely.
My high is big. The Crown season 6, it's happening. What a great, like, uplifting way to end last week. But the series was...
We had The Crown last week, too.
I know. So many highs. Now again. Yeah. The series was supposed to wrap after season 5, but Netflix just confirmed it would extend to include one more. It's a high for me because the fact of the matter is it's just more royal content, of course. But we know that season 4 is set to be released later this year, barring COVID complications. We know that it's centered around Charles and Diana. So my high relates to the fact, does this mean that if the season 4 is covering the early-ish 80s, we're assuming, does that mean that we're going to get to see William and Harry's lives play out?
Right. Season 5, 90s, season 6.
I mean, yeah, reports say that they are not, like, the creators of the show say they're staying away from present day, but that was pre this decision. So has that changed? Dun, dun, dun.
Has it changed? Ooh, that's so exciting. I can't wait. I hope it's, you know, and I think I read somewhere that the creator of the series said, like, they'll just do more detail and it'll be much more in-depth. And I'm excited for even that. Even
I'm
if it doesn't
for
cover
it all.
Right. Even if it doesn't cover the Fab Four, like, bring it on.
Yeah, because there's so many events that are, you just learn so many things about, so much about the historical.
I know. Love so, it. Yeah. All right. So just a reminder before we close this episode, leave us a royal rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Here's a real review from Saltwater Girl 777. She said, I have been listening from the beginning and the new hosts have brought such an amazing new energy and love of all things royal to the podcast. You were missing out on weekly happiness by not listening. Thanks for all you're doing on the podcast, Roberta and Rachel. Very sweet.
Weekly happiness
should be our time.
Here, here.
Yes. Reminder to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Follow us on Instagram and the Facebook group. And you can drop us an email at info@gallerypodcast.com. You can follow us personally on Instagram. I'm at Robbie Frito.
And I'm at RKBNYC.
And till next week.
God save the pod.
Her Majesties of Royally Obsessed have retired for this episode. God save the pod. And if you fancy the podcast, give Royally Obsessed the royal rating of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group, Royally Obsessed. Royally Obsessed is a Gallery Podcast production.